The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
24 of the world's top drivers meet at Silverstone for the Grand Prix of Europe. 70 laps lie ahead, 200 miles to come as they thunder away to a perfect start.
So this week marks 75 years of the Formula One World Championship, with the first ever Grand Prix taking place at Silverstone on May the 13th, 1950. To find out more, we're joined by Off the Ball's Cameron Hill. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
What was Silverstone before it became a racetrack?
An RAF field, so one of a number after the Second World War that were left a little bit defunct. They didn't need quite so many RAF airfields. It was a base for the Wellington Bombers until 1945. So plans were then drawn up to convert Silverstone into a suitable motor racing circuit. And the Royal Automobile Club, of which Earl McBoughton was the patron, hosted the first British Grand Prix there in 1948. 2 years later, the first ever F1 Grand Prix, the European Grand Prix, as it was called, was staged there.
And did it attract a big crowd?
100,000 people, including King George VI, Queen Elizabeth and Princess Margaret, the only time a reigning monarch has attended a British Grand Prix. And actually, the clip you heard there is from colourised footage of that was put up this week as part of the 75th anniversary, so you can watch it if you want.
So how many cars were on the grid?
21. So Italy's Giuseppe Nino Farina, the eventual winner, was part of a four-strong Alfa Romeo selection in the race. His team, Luigi Fagioli and Reg Parnell, joined him on the podium in second and third. No Ferrari, interestingly. They didn't enter a car until a week later in the Monaco Grand Prix, so they didn't make a feature in the first ever race.
But there was one of our own.
There was. 19th on the grid from qualifying was Dublinist Joe Kelly in his Alta GP3. So he was born in 1913, left school to become an apprentice on the railways, learned to be a fitter on steam trains, and eventually began driving trams and buses around Dublin. Obviously felt this was not his bag and wanted something a bit more exciting, so he moved to London and then returned in 1947, had become a bit of a petrol head, opened a petrol station and garage in the Red Cow in Clondalkin, you might have heard of. Around that time, he was building his own car, his race car, he called an IRA Special, which stands for Irish Racing Automobile. Just an unfortunate name. And took part in various races around Ireland at the Curragh especially, won a couple of championships before deciding to make the leap to races across the Irish Sea.
Now, how did he do at Silverstone?
His official result was a not classified. You can see it online on the actual database. He's recorded as completing 57, in fact, of the 70 laps in the race. Still, Kelly would come back next year. He'd compete in the Grand Prix, could only manage 55 laps, but he had embedded himself in the motor racing scene in Britain at that point. He became really good friends with the young Bernie Eccleston, who was then a part-time racing driver and motorcycle dealer. And Bernie would actually tell Joe of his plans to globalise Formula One, which he seemed to have, even as a small-time motor dealer. Joe would tell him this was a mad thing, that he was away with the birds. He said, "This isn't football." And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Now, Enzo Ferrari was, of course, the creator of the great Ferrari and then Fiat dynasties. Tell me about Joe's quest for a Ferrari.
So Kelly had become obsessed with Ferraris. He wrote a telegram to Enzo in 1954 inquiring about a possible purchase, except he didn't speak Italian. So he did know a restaurant owner who could translate, write the telegram for him and sent it to Maranello. And then one morning he received a reply, which, of course, was in Italian. So Kelly, unable to read the telegram, went over to the restaurant owner's house, wasn't awake at the time. So Kelly did what anyone would do. He threw a brick through his window just to wake him up so he could translate. And he managed to get a visit to the plant, meet old man Ferrari, and they agreed a deal. And he bought the first ever 7050 Monza to be sold to a private seller.
And then he pulled a stroke.
Then he pulled a stroke. So it arrived at Red Cow disassembled. He had to put it together himself. So I think this is a little bit of revenge, but he decides to paint it green, which...
the Ferrari red, yeah, sacrilege.
And Enzo Ferrari was not impressed, to say the least. He then sold it to Jaguar, who were Ferrari's greatest rivals in racing at the time, and they managed to see all the gearbox and the five-shift gearbox that Ferrari had innovated and gave them all the secrets to the car maker's success.
How long did Joe race?
Until 1955, and had a terrible crash. I think his leg was amputated as a result of it, and he died in 1993.
Now, we also should make honourable mention of another Irishman called Duncan Hamilton. Now, who is he?
Born in Cork in 1920 to Sydney and Mary Hamilton, they were both British. His house was shot at during the War of Independence. There were plenty of bullet holes one morning when Sydney went down to his front door, and young Duncan had to be tied to his mattress during the night to keep him from popping his head in the window and making himself a target for snipers. So from a very young age, living life on the edge, his family moved to London when he was 6 years old, and he developed a fascination for cars. Also, as I say, living life right on the edge. He knocked himself unconscious when he was two by crashing his pram down a flight of 38 steps. And then at Brighton College, he crashed his master's car through a wall and was reprimanded severely, to say the least.
Served honourably, though.
Served honourably. World War II breaks out and he joins the Navy as an airman, briefly in charge of a supermarine sea fire before he wrecked that and was grounded. The Navy said, "We're not doing that. We're going to keep you on the ground." And then he was involved. It's amazing. You go through his story. He was involved in about 7 submarine attacks during the war and survived numerous scrapes and sinkings. He chased what he thought was a German bomber with a few friends in a car once and had a really bad crash. And when the war ended, his girlfriend Angela agreed to marry him on the condition so that he would never fly an airplane again.
But he needed thrills.
Yeah, so high-speed motor racing it was.
Now, he was involved in the 24-hour Le Mans race when he thought he might not be, and that had consequences.
Yeah, this is one of the wildest stories I think I've ever brought to you. So 1953, Le Mans 24-hour, he's paired with Tony Rolt, the major who'd escaped from several different prisoner of war camps during the war and had concocted various escapes from Colditz. So probably the inspiration behind the board game. And they drove for Jaguar in that famous race, but were disqualified. So one of their teammates, I've read an account that it was Stirling Moss, had used one of the spare cars for practice, which was numbered 18, the same number as Hamilton and Rolt's car. One of the teams called foul and the pair were kicked out of the race. So disgruntled, they did what anyone would do. They went off to a bar and drank until the wee hours, their hopes of racing dashed. 6 hours before the race, Jaguar have paid a fine and managed to get them back in.
And they're hammered at this point.
Absolutely plastered. So they have 6 hours to get sobered up. And Rolt had sobered up sufficiently so that by 4 o'clock, the race was getting underway. He managed to get into the Jaguar C-Type and was right in the mix. Stirling Moss led for a good part of this race. Hamilton was given a load of coffee by the crew to try and get him into a fit enough state for a change of driver, but he found it had made him extremely jittery. So every time he came in to refuel to counter it, the crew would give him a glass of brandy.
Anyway, it was a strategy that worked.
Tony Rolt brings the Jag into the pits for the last change of driver and for a quick refuel. Now Hamilton takes the wheel for the last stage of the motoring marathon. Hamilton's challengers are still a couple of laps behind as he's flagged in. Not content with first place only, another Jaguar was second and another fourth. A splendid triumph for British cars and their drivers.
So there we are.
There you go. If you watch that footage, that's from the Pathé newsreel, the windscreen is split in half because a bird flew into it while Hamilton was driving, but he just continued on. This guy seems to be pretty unfazed by everything.
Yeah, and he was in the pits during the Le Mans disaster of 1955. That was a terrible accident.
One of the worst.
And many people died.
84. The driver, the French driver involved, and 83 spectators died when debris flew into the crowd. When you watch the footage of those races back, it was literally hay bales that were used to buffer the cars. So he was pretty disgusted by that. And then the breaking point came when his close friend, the 1958 world champion, Mike Hawthorne, was killed in a race in 1959. And Hamilton retired later that year. He died age 74 on Friday, the 13th of May, 1994. You can't say he was unlucky, though.
Cameron Hill from Off the Ball, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.